Back with you midweek Wednesday, April 21st, 2021 on Connecticut Today. Dr. Eric Cole, a former CIA computer hacker, joined us in the 3 o'clock hour to talk about cybersecurity for both business and governments. Mike Frieda, Republican First Selectman of North Haven, joined us in the 5 o'clock hour to talk about all things governance in Connecticut, both individual cities and towns and cooperation among area municipalities. And I also had some thoughts on politicians, including Democratic House Speaker Nancy Pelosi, weighing in on court decisions when I thought they should just hold off for a while. Talked earlier about the reaction from both the left and right from Nancy Pelosi, from what she said yesterday at the end of the after the verdicts were announced in the George Floyd case, which was just, oh, please. It's best sometimes if you're not sure, don't say anything. And she said George Floyd, she said he should or you should be. Well, let me give you the exact quote here. I don't want to butcher it. That wouldn't be fair. Pelosi saying, thank you, George Floyd, for sacrificing your life for justice. For being there to call out your mom. How heartbreaking that was, that to call out for your mom. I can't breathe. Are you kidding me? Sacrificing his life? He didn't make a willing sacrifice. You think he wanted that to happen to him walking out that day? Oh, my God. And how heartbreaking that was, calling out for your mom. I can't breathe. Oh, my God. And then you have what President Biden said yesterday, which I guess is still getting some blowback. And Jen Psaki got hit with this a couple of times today at the Daily News Conference. Now, folks, the ultimate irony of this is, and whatever you think, give me a call, 203-333-9422, 333-WICC. The ultimate irony of this is that Joe Biden, who is trying now to make amends for, you know, authoring a crime bill that put a lot of black people in jail. So now he comes out yesterday like this white knight, like this steed coming into, you know, suddenly be, you know, the reincarnation of Martin Luther King. I mean, it's comical. It's comical. Unreal. He mentioned yesterday, the president did, quote, it was a murder in the full light of day, and it ripped the blinders off the whole world to see systemic racism, the vice president just referred to. Really? This whole thing about America being this systemically racist country. Go ahead, keep saying that. See how that, you almost lost the House with this defund the police idiocy. Now, Biden's 1994 crime law, which he was the major proponent of, contributed to what people say was the mass incarceration. The 1994 crime law imposed a mandatory, now get this, a mandatory sentence of life without parole for a third serious drug conviction, sending some people to prison for life for marijuana dealing. Now, were there Republicans that supported that? Yes, of course they were. But this notion now that, you know, Joe Biden has suddenly had a kumbaya moment when it comes to race, come on, who believes that? Who believes that? Please, unreal. Jen Psaki also fending off reporter questions about how Joe Biden can pass the police reform bill named for George Floyd without compromise with Republicans who are pushing a far less reaching bill authored by Republican Senator Tim Scott. Now, the Democrats won't even look at the Tim Scott bill because it's been authored by a black guy. And they will, there is no way, they won't do it. They won't even look at it. They won't even look at it. So, again, is America perfect? No, of course it's not. You and I all know that. But I got to tell you something. It's still the country that millions and millions and millions of people would come here in a heartbeat. In a heartbeat. So I would just look. I've said this from the outset when this whole this whole, you know, $64,000 phrase of systemic racism gets tossed around? No, no, you got to be careful with that. Is there racism? Of course there is. Is the system right now systemically racist? No, you won't sell me on that. You just won't. You just won't. I have African-American black friends who are incredibly successful, who have enjoyed the fruits of this country, who are well-respected. You know why? I'm telling you. And it's not just for African-American people. It's for white people. It's for Asian-Americans. It's for Hispanic-Americans. What choices do you make in life? Now, let's say that not everybody is born into a situation that's equal. I get that. But what are the choices you make in life? Do you choose to stay in school? Do you choose to obey the law? Do you choose to delay having children? I'm sorry, folks. Somebody's got to say it. Yes, there are environmental things. There are things in systems that are not perfect and can weigh on whether or not a person is successful. I get that. I get that. I've experienced some of that. But since when have we stopped saying, hey, you made a bad situation here for yourself, right? I don't know how else you talk about this. I don't know how else you talk about this. What decisions do people make, black and white and Hispanic and Asian? And yes, we all make bad decisions. I get that. But some people continue to make bad decisions over and over and over again. And believe me, millions of people believe this, black and white. But sometimes you're just afraid to say it. Because now with social media, you will be stomped on. Look at what they did to what's-her-name, the woman who writes the Harry Potter books. I forget her name off the top of my head. The woman who writes the Harry Potter books. How she came out and she said, listen, you know what, this transgender stuff, people are born the way they're born, and, you know, we cannot say, you know, we can't suddenly turn off, you know, what a biological gender is. Oh, my God, she got hammered. I mean, the poor woman got pounded. Martina Navratilova, other people in this whole thing as to whether transgenders should play the sport of how they identify. I mean, it's mind-numbing. So again, all this stuff that we wrestle over in society now, all this stuff that we finger-point and scream at, we got to take a step back here and speak the truth, speak it without yelling or screaming. Speak it respectfully. Speak it looking to engage in a conversation. But the deification of some people on the left and right, because believe me, there are no, we saw that with the election scenario here, you know, with a lawyer like Lynn Wood calling for Mike Pence to be hung, string him up, hung, please. You know who has to rise up in this country? It's not a racial thing. Seriously, it's not a racial thing to rise up in this country. It's normal thinking people on both sides of all races to look at the other people and say, you know what? Shut up. Shut up. Now, part of the reason that I've loved doing shows like this over the years all over Connecticut is the people I get to talk to. And, for example, our next guest here. Now, how about this? He's worked in cybersecurity for 30 years. He began his career as a professional hacker with the CIA and learned that he could break into any computer that's accessible from the internet. Now, that's enough for me. I mean, you're on a level of cool if you can do that. However, he put his knowledge to good use, helping the government and commercial enterprises. He's a sought-after expert who's received many recognitions. He's in the InfoSec Hall of Fame, which must be cool. You've seen him and heard him on Fox News, CNN, CBS, and NBC. Name of the new book, Cyber Crisis, Protecting Your Business from Real Threats in the Virtual World. And we welcome Dr. Eric Cole to the show. Dr. Cole, Paul here at WICC. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me, Paul.
So there was a moment when you figured out you could get into any computer you wanted. Are you serious?
It sounds cooler than it is because of a simple fact. Whenever you add functionality to any system, there will always be security holes and vulnerabilities that can be exploited. So this concept of 100% security just does not exist in the real world.
So you were a professional hacker for the CIA. You can't tell us anything juicy, can you? Because that would be a problem. Okay, I get it. I understand. But what did you do, Dr. Cole, in that role for the CIA? Or can you say anything?
Yes. Yeah, so the role was all about, in some cases, it was pure offense to get into other people's computers. But most of what I did as a professional hacker was to find flaws in our systems so then we could fix them and protect them before adverse hackers got into those systems. So it was all about protecting, securing, and getting information so we could do a better job with cybersecurity.
You know, Dr. Cole, earlier in the hour, I talked about having you and guests like you on my show, and I have it all the time because the hackers can do anything from, you know, stealing your debit card information or your credit card information to trying to get into weapon systems, utility systems. And I don't know about the average person, but this stuff, even more, Dr. Cole, sometimes than regular weapons, this stuff scares the stuffing out of me.
Yeah, to me, the number one threat facing our nation, it's not the economy, it's not the epidemic, it's not nuclear weapons, it is cybersecurity, because we are so vulnerable as a country. Many people don't realize, but our critical infrastructure, our nuclear power plants have already been hacked and compromised. And at a much more granular level, individual accounts are being targeted on a regular basis. So to me, it doesn't matter who you are or how much money you have. You need to recognize that you are a target when it comes to cyber attacks.
All right, Dr. Cole, hang on. Quick break, traffic and weather together. Back with the author of Cyber Crisis, Protecting Your Business from Real Threats in the Virtual World. When we come back, we'll ask Dr. Eric Cole about what the common business person should be doing, what should they be afraid of, and then talk in a broader sense about who the real bad actors are. First, traffic and weather together on WICC. And undoubtedly, there are people in the wonderful town of Wilton who conduct business on the Internet, maybe financial stuff. Maybe they've been hacked. Maybe they say, what can I do? Our guest for the next few minutes to talk about that, Dr. Eric Cole, Cyber Crisis, Protecting Your Business from Real Threats in the Virtual World. So, Dr. Cole, what is the answer here? I know we hear solicitations all over the country from big cybersecurity firms, and we can protect your business, and you got to do this, and you got to do that. Are businesses still big and small? Dr. Cole, not doing what they should be doing, or are they doing it and it's still a problem?
In many cases, they're just not doing the basic things that need to be done. For example, unless you still wear bell bottoms and listen to the Bee Gees, you shouldn't be using passwords. Those are so old school, right? You have to be using multi-factor authentication or two-factor authentication. That's where you get a unique code every time you log in. That alone stops a large percent of the attacks. And then the other big thing is we can't be checking email and surfing the web from our Windows computer that has all of our critical data on it. One of the simplest and easiest tricks is when you're going to surf the web or check email, do it from an Android or an iPhone or an iPad. And once again, that with two-factor authentication eliminates a large number of threats against small, medium, and large organizations.
You know, Dr. Cole, I'm not laughing at you. I'm laughing at a friend of mine who about, you know, a year, year and a half ago, his business had gone to this two-factor authentication where you got the number on his phone and then you had to re-enter it. And he said to me, and all willing and good, he said, you know, oh, I don't do that. I just leave my email and my stuff logged on all the time. And I gulped and I said, no, you really shouldn't do that. What do you think?
Yeah, like I say, we can give somebody the safest car on the planet, but if you drive at 100 miles an hour into a tree, you can still hurt yourself or kill yourself in that car. And it's the same thing. Computers have a lot of security features, but if you go in no way, shape, or form, am I calling your friend stupid, but hypothetically, if you do stupid things by staying logged in or don't protect your information, all the security in the world is not going to be able to protect you.
And these security firms that may solicit local businesses, Dr. Cole, Is it the cost sometimes between, because I know these firms do provide a service and they have to eat, they have to pay bills. So is it that many small and medium-sized businesses say, well, I'll take care of it in-house. I don't have to contract out somebody, even though they say I have major flaws.
Yeah, a lot of it comes down to where cybersecurity, a lot of people view it like accidents, illnesses, and robberies. Those are things that happen to other people. Nobody thinks it's going to happen to them. I know a small dentist office, he was doing very well, and he's like, Eric, no one would target me. He had a massive cyber attack, and he's out of business right now. So I think it's a lot of awareness out there that, hey, we are a target, and we either invest a small amount of money in cybersecurity today, or we're willing to go out of business in 9 or 12 months when a major cyber breach happens to our organization.
Okay, now on the world scene and the national scene, I think we know who the bad guys are. Dr. Cole, I'm reading about, again, a Chinese hack, which, of course, the Chinese Communist government says, oh, who? Us? We know what the Russians have done, the Biden White House now trying to clap back at them. North Korea, Iran, these are always suspected. There kind of is this shadow war going on, Dr. Cole, isn't it? And do we punch back in this thing that sometimes people don't know how we do it? Do we, if we are attacked, do we attack back?
So from a military standpoint, about 3 years ago, the military is now allowed to attack back and use cyber action against our adversaries without getting presidential approval. Prior to 3 years ago, the president had to approve every single cyber action. However, the problem is this. The military is focused on the country and military and governmental attacks. They're not directly focused on corporations, companies, and citizens. And right now, if a company, non-government, gets hacked and you hack back, that's actually considered illegal, and you could actually get in trouble for that. So to me, we have to change some of these laws. I call them cyber self-defense, right? If you're in a bar and somebody hits you, you can fight back. If you're on the internet and somebody attacks you, you should be able to defend yourself and take appropriate action. But the laws have just not kept up with the technology.
And it's astounding to me, Dr. Cole. And by the way, Dr. Eric Cole is the guest. The name of the book, Cyber Crisis: Protecting Your Business from Real Threats in the Virtual World. You know, it's astounding in the case, Dr. Cole, of say, China. I mean, they yes us to death and they nod us to death and they sign this and they sign that. Yet everybody on the planet seems to say that, yes, they are the number one economic cyber espionage people on the planet.
Absolutely. And yeah, we always jokingly say, but there's so much truth to it. If somebody is stealing intellectual property, mainly from corporations, that is usually the Chinese. The Chinese are targeted much more on companies than the government. If it's financially driven attacks, it's normally coming from Russia. And if it's destructive style of attacks, taking down systems or computers, it's usually North Korea or the Iranians. And the interesting thing is, as I said, most of the attacks we're seeing from Russia and China are actually focused on individuals and corporations, and only a small percent is actually focused on the government itself.
So let me wrap up with this. In a couple of minutes we have left, Dr. Cole, are we recruiting the best and the brightest to help us with this? Is there a tug of war, for example, going on in your field, looking for the best and the brightest who might be, you know, inclined to go into private business, or is that a bad thing? Because you've done both here. What are your thoughts on that?
Yes, cybersecurity is one of the fastest growing fields, and the problem is we can't find enough talented people to do this work. So I always encourage, I mean, if you have kids, grandkids, nephews, or anything else, encourage them to go into cybersecurity. And the scary thing is, the last number I saw was 71% of all students that are graduating with advanced degrees in cybersecurity in U.S. universities, where do you think they go when they graduate? Back to China and Russia. So we're actually training the adversary, and we're not keeping enough of them within the United States.
It's mind-numbing. What makes a good cybersecurity professional? What are the traits and the qualities?
most important is somebody who's very creative, who likes to solve new problems every single day, and is always going to keep searching until you get that yes answer. To me, I'm one of those people that if you tell me a problem is impossible, that is the most exciting thing for me, because I will do anything I can to solve it. So if you want to do something different all the time and unique, come into cybersecurity. It doesn't matter if you have a technical background. All different types of people are very, very successful.
Fast forward, final question, Dr. Cole, fast forward 10 years from now, in the year 2031, what do you think the cybersecurity map of the world looks like?
If I get my prayers answered, we actually live in a safe, secure world where information and data is properly protected and locked down. If my predictions are right, which unfortunately I don't think my prayers will get answered, I think you're going to see cybercrime being the biggest economic force in the entire world, where billions and billions of dollars are being stolen, because we need to recognize that in 10 or 12 years, we are going to be living our entire lives online, and that's going to be the stage for cyber attackers and criminals.
The book Cyber Crisis, Protecting Your Business from Real Threats in a Virtual World. The guest, Dr. Eric Cole. He's worked in cybersecurity for 30 years and at one time was a hacker for the CIA, so he knows where all the bad guys are. Dr. Cole, thank you. Appreciate it. Good luck, and hopefully we can talk down the road. Thanks.
Thank you.
All right, thank you, Dr. Eric Cole, C-O-L-E. The book comes out June 1, so it's not out yet. Cyber Crisis, Protecting Your Business from Real Threats in the Virtual World, and protecting the country, too. Don't you love that? People come here. Folks, don't you love that? People come here from other countries, from some countries that attack us, that attack us. We train them at elite universities, right? And then they leave, and they go back, and they attack us. Seriously. Well, Paul, you know, America's got to have welcoming arms. Yeah, you know what it is? A lot of these colleges, they see that foreign tuition money, and they just go, la, 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 la. Okay.
Paul, good afternoon. It's great to be with you here.
Thanks, Mike. Appreciate it. For folks who don't know about or what the South Central Regional Council of Governments do, Mike, give us a little refresher.
Yes, so the South Central Regional Council of Governments is one of four or five Council of Governments, Paul, across the state of Connecticut. And in our case, in the South Central region, there's 15 municipalities that are part of this. First selectmen, mayors, town managers sit on this Council of Governments. We're a governing board. We review a lot of local and regional issues. We entertain a lot of presentations from the state, whether it be the DEEP or the DOT. We receive a great deal of updates as to what's happening around us, and we are a central repository for federal funding to allocate towards our municipalities for road and bridge improvements. That's kind of a brief overview of some of our responsibilities.
So does this, Mike, kind of throw cold water on some of the critics of Connecticut's governmental setup, saying, well, we need to have county government again because we need cooperation? It sounds to me like your body and all the other regional councils of government, Mike, sounds to me like you're doing that.
We are. Now, we're not officially a county format, but what we're seeing in the past year to 2 years, Paul, is just what you said. More and more issues are coming through the Council of Governments. And within our Council of Government, as an example, we're looking at sharing services. We're looking at creating efficiencies for our municipalities. Funding is coming in. Grants are coming in that we can collaborate together to put together regional programs that would cost each of us a lot more individually if we weren't part of the Council of Governments.
You know, Mike, you just answered that question. I'm glad you did. Somebody may look at this, you know, Connecticut being the land of steady habits, 169 little fiefdoms, and saying, hey, I'm in North Haven. What do I care about New Haven? Or, hey, I'm in Ansonia or in Trumbull or in Easton. Why should I be concerned about, you know, doing something in concert with Bridgeport? So I guess by what you just said, Mike, it does often come down to dollars and cents.
Yes, it does. And from a public safety standpoint, if I can take a moment to illustrate a significant example of collaboration among us. 3 years ago in May, on or about May 3rd or 4th, Paul, we had an explosion here on Quinnipiac Avenue in North Haven, where a house was on fire, hostages were held, and within minutes, we had regional teams of public safety people come to support our local police and fire department. We had agencies from surrounding towns that were part of a SWAT team, as an example, police agencies, fire agencies, the FBI was here. So we couldn't have handled that ourselves without that type of regional and, as it turned out, federal support. And that's an example of the collaboration that we as municipalities work towards.
Mike Fried is the guest, North Haven current first selectman and chair of the South Central Regional Council of Governments, one of several councils of governments around the state, kind of getting area municipalities to work together. So, Mike, has this been, or I probably should say, how rough has it been over the past year and a half and likely will be for 2 years before we finally get some semblance of normalcy back after this whole COVID situation?
Great question, Paul. I've been in office now 6 terms. This is my 12th year. This has to be, without a doubt, the most challenging year because in the middle of a pandemic, we also were battered by storms. We had a tornado that devastated 45% of our town, power outages all over. We had Isaias, Tropical Storm Isaias. There were blizzards in January and February. And it's interesting because I just got through reading an article in the New York Times. And the title of the article was America's Mayors Are Exhausted with the Challenges and with the Predicaments that We've Been Faced with. I use the challenges as a motivating factor. Now, many years ago, of course, you and I knew each other, and you were a broadcaster of baseball games, which I played in, and I should have known then that you'd be a successful radio announcer. So I have fond memories of that. But I take a page out of my baseball career and my corporate business career. I respond to challenges, and there's no challenge that this government will ever face that we will not face with a great deal of confidence, courage, conviction to create positive outcomes. But it has been a very challenging year.
I would imagine not just you, Mike, as the first selectman of North Haven, but select persons and mayors all over the state between COVID-19 and those storms you mentioned. I mean, there must have been days, Mike, where your phone just must have been ringing. I mean, constantly. It must have never stopped. You must not have had 5 minutes for a sandwich.
Well, it's very true. I mean, we were averaging 150 phone calls a day in town hall. I would get 150 emails. But as I have explained to my colleagues that in challenging crisis times, crisis management has to be implemented in a very customer service-oriented fashion. And throughout this past year, Paul, we've seen people disenfranchised, socially distanced and isolated. We've helped hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people get back on track with unemployment that they couldn't get into the system. We've helped over 1,000 senior citizens because they had no computer access. They had no way to register for a vaccine. We've hosted a vaccine clinic here in collaboration with our health department. So when we, as chief elected officials, can help people and turn the range of emotions from despair to hope to a positive outcome, that's a very rewarding thing, and that continues to motivate me.
And, Mike, finally, you know, pressures are put upon yourself and mayors and first select persons all over the state, you know, regarding taxes. And we always hear about what is there a better way to raise both state and municipal funding? I know there's currently now some debate in Hartford. Hey, do we get away with the with the state property tax on cars and go to a different system? A lot of this stuff, Mike, gets bandied around every year. I would imagine that's got to be a constant thing on the minds of you and everybody in the council and mayors and first select persons all over the state, Mike, as to trying to do that budget balance every year of not burdening people with overtaxation, with egregious taxation, but you still got to make your municipality work.
Yes, another challenge, and it is, believe me. Now, six out of the last 11 years here, I've had no tax increase. I actually reduced the mill rate last year, and I'm proposing a slight reduction in the mill rate this year. And one of the strategies, Paul, that I implement is I'm actively involved with all the economic development. We grew the grand list 2 years ago, 9.3%, and I'm involved with every single economic development project. So when we can grow the grand list that way through bringing new businesses in, that helps offset the uncertainty of what you just talked about.
Has anybody said to you, Mike, that the phrase Governor Mike Frieda might sound good? Has anybody ever No.
Well, no? I'll leave that to for others to answer, Paul. How's that?
All right, that was good and diplomatic of you. I like that. Cuz I'm sure Mike, you know, people are going to call me in the next year and says, "Hey, that Frieda guy, he sounds pretty good." I said, "Well, there you go." All right. Mike Frieda, the multi-term incumbent Republican first selectman of North Haven and currently the chair of the Board of Officers at the South Central Regional Council of Governments. Michael, always good to speak with you. We'll be in touch. Thanks.
Thank you, Paul. My pleasure.
All right, Mike. Appreciate it. Mike Frieda, first selectman, Republican, North Haven, six terms so far.